Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies, today we are talking about the 8th episode of the 5th season, The Broken Wing Job. Beth, what did you think?
I loved this episode. I'm going to be real. I'm not even going to pretend like I did it. It was phenomenal. Mm. I had an excellent time. Yeah. That's it. That's the episode. Bye, guys. Thanks so much for listening.
So how do you rate the episode this week, Beth?
Hope you have a lovely evening, afternoon. No, I loved this episode. I really did. My first note, though, I think is really funny because it was like, ooh, we're going international. And then later I went and amended it and put in brackets, or not. Because, like, they introduce the episode, like, in Tokyo, and then we spend exactly 90 seconds in Tokyo and the rest of the episode just back in the pub. Yeah. And I just think that's hilarious. Like, as a setup, it's just really fun.
It's so iconic of them to be like, we've got a cast of 5 characters. We're going to look at one character this week,
mm-hmm.
and then everyone else gets maybe 30 seconds of screen time.
I know. It's iconic, honestly. I love to see it. I love Parker. She's my girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's really funny, and I promise this is, I'm going to not bring it up anymore after this, but I think it's really funny that we happen to watch this episode of Leverage and the man who would be king of Supernatural on the same weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how the universe teed that up, but the coincidences I think it's hilarious. Are coincidences,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is one of my favorite episodes of mm-hmm. all time.
I can see why.
I am a Parker girl. I'm a Parker stan.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've actually mentioned this episode to you ages and ages and ages
ago. I recognize a couple of the quotes.
Because we had a episode that you didn't really love. I think it was the carnival job.
Yeah.
And I'm going to fact check myself as I do this. Because I'm 90% sure the carnival job has the same writer as this episode. And I'm double checking now because I'm pretty sure the writer of this episode, I was really confused. And I was like, you won't know why yet. But the fact that this writer, if you look at his writing credits on Leverage,
mm-hmm.
is Elliot episode, Elliot episode, Elliot episode, Elliot episode, Elliot episode, Elliot episode, the Parker episode. Elliot
all time, yeah.
The writing is, yeah, so M. Scott Veitch is the writer I'm referring
to. That's crazy. I love this episode and I fucking hated the carnival job.
Yeah, like it was really wild to me that, like, looking at his writing credits and having the Broken Wing job there, because primarily he's a writer who writes a lot of Elliot-centered episodes, which is absolutely fine. Like, it's the sort of thing where I feel like they just like characters more. Mm-hmm. So when they write an episode, they really favor the characters that they like, and they choose concepts that really favor the characters they like. So it's really wild to me when you have a writer who I would say I associate his writing really quite heavily with Elliot. Like, I feel like he's an Elliot writer.
Yeah.
And so it's just really, it's really interesting when it is, when they deviate so thoroughly from what they've done previously.
Do you know what is really funny though, now you mention that, is I think that maybe, like, obviously it makes sense that Hardison is probably the character we get the most of outside of Parker in this episode, obviously just because of their, like, tie together. But I think that Elliot, it probably comes a very, very close second, like, in mm-hmm. terms of screen time and dialogue in this episode. Like, I think Elliot probably is quite up there. I mean, I would have to go back and, like, you know, do timers and whatever to check, but I'm pretty sure, like, just off the top of my head, that Elliot probably got more than his fair share of the rest of the episode, just in terms of, like, time he actually spent on screen or dialogue he was given. And this isn't a complaint at all. I just think it's really interesting that that's the case, given the writer's history. It's literally, this is kind of like the fact that, like, we always shit on Darb for, like, being a terrible writer in terms of characterizing Dean, and yet he wrote Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this feels the same to me. It's like, what do you mean that's the same creative director? Like, what do you mean?
And to be fair, this is a co-written episode, and so the other writer, Rebecca Kirsch, I would say her other episodes, like, they make sense. Like, if you put the Broken Wing job in there, you're like, it makes sense. So she did the Jura number 6 job.
Okay.
Parker episode, the Gone Fishing job, and Elliot and Hardison episode.
Uh-huh.
Also, I would say a really pivotal point for Parker in that episode as well, when she decides to forgive the medical debt. Mm-hmm. The Grave Danger job, which is a Hardison episode all the way.
Which sort of by default makes it a Parker
episode. Yeah. The Queen's Gambit job.
Oh, interesting.
Parker Hardison episode. Obviously, also a Sterling episode, so it's iconic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I feel like her episodes vibe more with this sort of episode, but it is very wild to me that, M. Scott Veitch, is also credited as a writer on this one.
Fascinating.
Considering that I would say 90% of his work is Eliot focused, this is like the 1% like outlier.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, like, I love the premise of this episode. Yeah. It's very fun. It's really such a nice break, I think. Like, Leverage is, like, the episodes, I mean, like most TV, like, they follow a procedure, you know? And it's always really, really fun when we get a break from that general procedure, especially when it's a break that's done in a really fun, interesting way. Like, I really enjoy this episode kind of the same way that I really enjoy The Office Job. You know, like, it's just a different perspective.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really fun, in this case, insight into Parker and what she might do if she was left incapacitated by, oh my God, an ACL.
It's just a sprained knee.
Yeah, look. That one's particularly nasty. But I really loved, actually, on actually, one, how many times have I said actually in like the last fucking 20 seconds? What I found really, really interesting is that we have the like montage essentially of Parker like scrolling through different like channels and trying to like entertain herself and stuff. And number one, it was kind of giving that little montage in New Moon, Twilight, where Bella is like deep in her depression and it's just like the seasons changing around her and she just stays in one chair. But the thing that surprised me about it was I was like, why was this not everywhere during the pandemic? Why have I not seen this scene before? Because it was so applicable. I was like, yeah, so many people were just like stuck at home, rewatching the same things on Netflix or like getting bored out of their minds, like trying to entertain themselves, you know, sitting in their pajamas, eating cereal at 2 p.m. Like, I was like, I mean, to be fair, that wasn't my pandemic experience, but I know it was for a lot of people.
I was an essential worker.
Same. But, you know, I was surprised. I was like, damn, I cannot believe that this was not something that was just everywhere. Like, I can't believe this didn't become some kind of meme at some point. It just feels like it should have. Like, when she's talking to the bear and, like, the bear is sitting there with, like, the medication and the orange soda, which, oh my God, the fact that she's drinking orange soda, bless, so fucking cute. But I was like, this is crazy. Like, this seems like the perfect panini, you know.
It's like a lovely representation of kind of what it was like to be stuck at home and you wanted to be literally anywhere else.
Yeah.
Not that that was my experience. I did, in fact, still have to work 50 hours a week, but
yeah,
look, I'm sure many people can relate.
I feel like the pandemic was like either you couldn't work or you were working more than you'd ever worked in your life.
Yeah.
And there was no middle ground. And we both fell into the working more than you've ever worked in your life. Yeah. And then also decided to start a podcast because we're psychotic.
I was going to say totally fine and normal.
Yeah. But yes, no. So I think it was really, really fun as a concept. And I think that it was executed really well.
I also love the addition of Amy this week. I think
yes,
Amy is the perfect sort of character to rope into this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is, Parker says at one point in the episode, you're like us. And she goes, what do you mean? And she's like, well, you have to help people.
Mm.
Like, there is no question in my mind why Hardison chose you of everyone to be the person to come up and help me and kind of babysit me while he was out of town. Like, she does charity work. Like, she's just such a kind and caring person.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also a little bit like, just down to help. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's so kind and caring. She's freewheeling a little bit. And I love the way that they play off of each other and the whole, is this illegal? Oh yeah, no, absolutely not. It's perfectly. And then we should call the cops. No, what we've been doing is totally a little bit illegal.
I know. I particularly when she said that her dad wanted her to take over the family business. And then Parker's like, oh, what's the family business? And she's like, what isn't the family business? I'm like, a Supernatural core, LMAO. But also, I had a note right after that.
I mean, like, she does work at a bar that Christian Kane runs, so.
Literally. And oh my God, at the very end, when Parker's like, oh, try Elliot's chili, it's the best. I was like, oh my God, stop. So cute. But I had a note that was like, how much does Amy know? And also, I feel like her family business is also along the lines of crime, right? Yeah. And so, like, I kind of picked that something more was up with Amy. I didn't pick exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. And actually, I really enjoyed the plot twist. I think that it was really cleverly played because the whole time that they were, like, explaining it, originally when they introduced the two guys casing the joint, I was like, do they mean that they want to rob the bar? Like, that felt weird. And then I was like, oh, okay, the store's outside. Yeah. That makes more sense. And the window, I was like, oh, that's really, really clever. And it, at no point did it occur to me that they would try to kidnap her.
Yeah.
I thought that maybe she was somehow involved with the two of them, kind of thing. Yeah. Like, because I was like, oh, or like maybe her like dad's business was involved. Yeah. I was like, this feels shady. Mm-hmm. But I didn't pick that they were going to kidnap her. So I thought that was really fun. And when they did the reveal that they were watching the glass to get her reflection,
yeah,
I was like, oh, that's really clever. And like, they really effectively peppered in the bits about her taking out the bins every day. Yeah. I was like, oh, I love it. Like, you built this in a really, really clever way to the point where, like, as soon as you get the reveal, you're like, oh, that makes a million pieces of sense. And I see everything clicking together, like, without
everything from mentioning, you know, like, what is in the family business to, like, I did track and field for a hot minute at St. Tristan's Prep. Mm. Clearly an expensive private school. You don't talk about a public school that way. You know what I mean?
Like, and it's so funny that you say that, because, like, when she mentioned it, I was like, it's weird that she specified the school. I was like, that doesn't seem like necessary information, but like, it is. And like, that's the thing. I was like, oh, that's like kind of weird. And so it twigs you, but it doesn't give everything away, but it is a clue. And I just think that sometimes leverage falls really hard on one side or the other of like, just not giving you enough information at all. Like,
either they purposefully like don't give you the information, or they give you so much information that you can't
pick up really early. Okay. Yeah. And so I was like, it either feels like sort of Sherlock territory of like, oh, we will give you no information, then we're going to make ourselves look really smart at the end. Or it falls into like almost Doctor Who territory of like Eccleston standing in front of the London Eye going, where would they put a giant metal dish in the middle of London? That's ridiculous. Everyone would see it. And you're like, yeah, mate, they might. You know, like, but I think this particular episode really walked the line very well of like, we are going to give you enough information that you absolutely can work it out. And we want you to work it out at exactly the right moment. And it's kind of like the thing I like so much about the Boys Night Out job. And like, the way that they had teed up so many reveals so well in the Girls Night Out job. Sorry, the Boys Night In job.
Yeah.
They teed up the reveals so well in the Girls Night Out that when you got them in the Boys Night In, you were like, oh, okay. And you could work it out just as you were supposed to.
Yeah.
And so it's really, I think, a very satisfying experience, personally, you know?
Which does lead me to my one and only question that I've ever had for this episode.
Ooh, okay.
The one thing that's always confused me, and I think it's just a cultural difference thing. In what universe does the bin truck come every day?
Oh, do you know what's funny? Is I don't know. Like, and I did my fair share of, like, service work.
Yeah.
I have no idea when our dumpsters used to get collected.
Ours was weekly, like once a week.
Yeah.
And they would come and collect our bins. And, like, I understand that, like, I worked in a mid-sized restaurant. It wasn't massive by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, we shared dumpsters with a number of businesses. So yeah. I can imagine that they were done relatively regularly, but certainly not every day. I would have noticed a garbage truck every day.
Yeah, it just seems weird to me that they're getting emptied every... Like, is this a normal thing in America? Do you have... Like, do the bins get taken every day?
Yeah.
Because that seems excessive.
How much rubbish could you possibly be making?
Exactly.
Like, because we have... Generally, I mean, we're at, like, you know, generally speaking, you like general rubbish goes once a week.
Yeah.
And that's like not like a wheelie bin. That's not a huge amount. Like, I can't imagine a whole dumpster's worth in a day. Even if you were working in like a busy restaurant, that like, sounds like an absurd amount of trash.
That seems like, so here, like when I worked in Food Hoss, we did change the bins every day. Like they did.
Oh, yeah, the bins internally.
The internal bins got changed every day and they all went out into the back dumpster and then that got emptied like once a week. It wasn't like, yes, doing the bins was a daily job, but like the way they frame it in this episode is not just like, oh, well, she does the trash run every day and she changes the bins like between, you know, lunch and dinner shift, which is
makes sense,
a perfectly normal thing. I feel like that's what most restaurants would do, and then you change them again at the end of the night, so they get changed either once or twice a day depending on what sort of bin and how quickly they fill up. But they frame it as like, no, like the rubbish truck comes every day at 2:30. So the bins have to be done before then. So the rubbish is in the bin.
Yeah, that seems really weird.
Which seems just too often for me.
I mean, here's the thing. If your city has like, you know, that kind of system for trash and rubbish removal, like great, I guess. But it does seem weirdly regular.
It seems weirdly excessive.
Like...
Like, if it was just framed as like, oh, I do like...
coming once a day, sure. The garbo coming once a day.
if it was just framed as like, oh, well, she just like it, unfortunately it falls to her. She has to, you know, empty the bins every day. Okay, great. I can buy that she empties the bins every day and they're relying on her emptying the bins every day. But they frame it as like the garbage truck comes every day and so therefore she has to have the bins done at a set time.
Mm.
So that she, like the garbage, like the bins are done when the garbage truck comes. But it just seems...
This is like us being confused about Americans having like metal tin can bins
yeah.
that don't make any fucking sense. One other thing that I wanted to ask you about hospo, specifically yeah. food hospo, right. In this episode, like a key point
yeah.
is that all the different customers have like different quirks, right? And that's so yeah. fucking true. Like mm-hmm. if you work in one place for a long time...
The moment where Parker says, he's not James, he's Chicken Palm... So fucking real.
I know. So fucking funny. So, like, the number of customers that I used to know just by their order,
mm-hmm.
like...
Not knowing that dude's name is James and actually just referring to him internally as Chicken Palm.
Yeah.
The most relatable food hospital okay. thing I've ever seen.
Okay. Which is brings me to my question, mm-hmm. right? Chicken Palm.
Yeah.
What do we think the correct terminology is? Because I will say palmy.
As a correct Australian, I know that it's a palmy. So
because
some people I'm not say taking palm, feedback on that.
Some people say palmer. Some people say palmy. It's always been palmy for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that some people have very strong opinions on this.
It's a palmy.
A palmy?
Look.
So our official stance is a podcast.
As someone who used to work in Food Hoss and sell palmies, it's a palmy. Like that's... I am qualified to give you the correct name, and the correct name is a chicken palmy.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Amazing. I'll take it. I like that this is our official stance as a podcast, that yeah. the correct terminology is, in fact, chicken palmy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just works better. It just rolls off the tongue. It's like...
Palmer feels longer somehow. I know that's yeah. not. I know it's the exact same amount of syllables.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it's just maybe because we put an E on the end of so many things. It's like an Eggs Benny. It's yeah. not an Eggs Benedict. Mm-hmm. What are you fucking talking about? This egg didn't play Sherlock Holmes. No. It's Eggs Benny. Sorry. Oh, God. This episode's going to be a disaster. Anyway.
The fucking energy this week.
Why have I brought up Sherlock so many times already? Anyway, point is...
Because we're planning on doing Super Hoolock for the other one.
Shh. Don't give away our secrets. Chicken Palmy, though.
Yeah.
So, James, is so Nate core. Like, not mm. him sitting dejectedly at the bar every single day ordering the same thing mm. and, like, you know, all this shit. I was like, oh, this is, like, I think Parker has just had a lot of growth as a character and, like, genuinely cares about the well-being of people that she, like, observes around her. But also I feel like she looks at him and she's like, oh, that looks like Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially because, like, there was a death that he's, like, not coping well with and he's clearly, like, fallen away from his passion and his work and he's, you know, sitting alone. They make a point of him being lonely. And I was like, literally the only thing that he is missing at this point is a hat.
And like, the alcoholism.
Well, you know, he is sitting in a bar every day. They mention specifically yeah. the chicken palmy, but they don't talk about drinks yeah. generally. So he could also be drinking.
Look, I've never actually thought of it as like a Nate kind of half standard.
Oh, really?
No, I've never. That is a new take for me. Mm. I do enjoy it. And I do think that if she does see Nate in there, because you've also got to remember the only thing that got Nate out of that was crime. Was yeah. crime with the team specifically. Like, it wasn't like he just snapped out of it on his own and then started doing crime. No, crime was a fundamental part in his recovery from his grief and his ability to move on. The team and what they did for him is one of the only reasons why he's even half mentally stable right now. Like,
yeah. Well, I saw it a lot in like in the things that I've already sort of elaborated mm-hmm. on, but also in the way that Parker at the end like approaches him and like makes sure he knows that he has community. Like these people around him, like he may not necessarily feel like he's making any kind of impact, mm-hmm. but he definitely is. And she points out like, hey, you really helped that lady the other day, you know? And then she makes the effort of like, getting the staff, you know, they obviously clear out the bar and it's just him and the staff kind of hanging out. Like she gives him that community,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really, really interesting in the broader like aspects of Nate's arc in this season. Also, oh my God, the bit at the end where he's just like, you did a great job while we were away. I was like, Nate's gonna retire and he is prepping them all. Even Sophie this fucking week does the whole like, oh, baby bird's flying the nest thing. And I was like, yeah, because you guys are ready to retire together in your little like child-free home. And so you have to have the baby birds fly. Like, that's just, you're ready to kick them the fuck out so that you have your little empty nest. Like, that's That's the thing. If I'm wrong about this, I'm going to be so embarrassed because I have been, I've been fucking going on about it for so long now.
I will say, as always, my comment is firmly no comment.
Okay.
I am not allowed to reveal anything about the season finale. Only thing I'm willing to tell you about the season finale is that I love it. Excellent. And I do genuinely think it is one of the best season finales I've ever seen.
Okay, great.
So
I love that.
I'm not saying hey nor nay about that. Though I will say, because I don't think this is a spoiler, I will say that this episode is definitely relevant to the season finale.
Okay, interesting.
And I'm acknowledging that here.
Mm-hmm.
In vague, broad strokes, there's at least one element of this episode that is relevant to the season finale.
Okay.
I'm not going to say anything specifically about which element, etc. And if you do want to talk to me about it, you can come and talk to me about it. I'm just not allowed to obviously say anything to Beth.
Ooh.
About how I think this is a very important episode when you look at how the trajectory of the season goes. And I do think it is a very, very interesting episode to talk about when you have seen the full season. But I am not saying how or why, etc., because that it goes against my commitment to not spoil this for Beth.
Oh, look at you. Doing such a respectable job of keeping me naive. No.
Well, here's the fun thing. You're actually naive.
Yeah.
Because I say shit in Supernatural, and apparently I'm not that naive.
Well, I think the joy from that is that you don't know that you're not. Like, you think that you're just being silly funny. And I'm like over
silly,
here,
funny, goofy, ha ha.
Absolutely suffering. Yeah. So
your suffering's the point, Beth.
Oh, shut up.
You're the one keep on going on about how you're decoded.
Well, am I wrong?
I mean, no, but
thank you.
It is certainly something that you. I'm not saying you're correct or incorrect, but I'm definitely saying you're correct in assuming that this is going to be relevant to the finale, etc. Cool. Moving on.
I actually, like, do you know what? I didn't necessarily think about it in terms of the finale, but I did wonder if it was going to be relevant in future episodes, purely for the fact that we get that obviously Amy's like dad is worth $1 billion or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like we have specifically a screenshot or like a scene where we see Parker's phone and it like sort of talks about like the family business or whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't pause it to read it or anything, but I was like, oh, I wonder if this particularly will come up because obviously like billionaires are the kind of people that normally the team would be pretty involved in making not billionaires anymore. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be relevant. I wonder if there is a reason why Hardison hired her as more of a like, oh, we should probably keep tabs on this particular family and their particular goings on. Because also Parker made a point this episode saying like, oh, you think that he chose you at random? Like, no, he read your fucking CV. He knows who you are.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, like Hardison absolutely would know her family background, where she comes from. I do also think it's interesting that she comes from a $1 billion family and yet works in food service.
Like, that's because she's been disowned by her parents.
Okay, so she was actually disowned?
Well, I don't know if she's been disowned, but her family's not supporting her.
Okay.
That's the whole point. She wants to go to art school, but because it's not an MBA.
Yeah.
Or a business degree.
Yeah.
Her family's not going to support her to do an arts degree.
Okay. Because I did not read that like, oh, they're not supporting her at all. I just read that as they don't want her to study that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't read it as like, oh, we are not talking. I didn't think of it as like John Winchester Corps. Like, you know, I didn't think that they were like, oh, you want to study the arts? I guess we'll kick you out and like, you know,
no,
never speak to you again.
I've always read it as implied she's no longer being financially supported by her family because she's studying the arts and not what they...
So oh, essentially, I didn't think she was studying at all. I got the impression... For me, I read that scene as like she would like to study the arts, but she has no like... They won't support her in doing it, so she has no viable way to do it. And maybe that's why she's working to like get the money to do it herself. But like... I didn't think she was on bad terms with her family or anything.
I don't read it as on bad terms. I just read it as her family aren't supporting her financially while she does her arts degree because it's not what they wanted to do.
Mm, okay.
So it's kind of like that thing of, I don't want you to do this, so I'm not going to pay for you to be able to do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So she's kind of gone, no, I'm going to do
it. Well, I really want to do it. Yeah. Okay, mad respect for that. But, yeah. No, interesting.
So, I've always personally seen that as like a... You know, she's not on bad terms with her parents, but it's certainly not like they're not paying for her to.
They don't love the decision she's making.
They don't like the decision, and it's not a business degree, so they're not going to pay for her degree, which means that she has to work.
Mm.
It is always how I've read that. That's why she's a billionaire's daughter who is working because she's going against what her parents want, so her parents aren't paying for it.
One thing that I did have as a note this episode that I thought was really funny. And I have this note just for like context, quite close to the end of my notes. Like it took me a little while to put these pieces together, but I did think it was so funny.
Yeah.
So it occurred to me that the way that Parker is like manipulating everyone and like, you know, she sends the like partner of the cheating guy the photos and like she's setting people up on dates and like whatever else. I was like, oh my God, this is the equivalent of being homesick and playing The Sims. Parker is playing The Sims Parker's version right now. And that was so fucking funny to me because I was like, this is exactly what I would have done if I was homesick from school. I also would have involved myself in controlling a bunch of criminals and making people have weird illicit love affairs with each other. Like, that's exactly how I play The Sims. I was like, this is so funny. Like, it's like, so transferable between the two examples.
Like, and obviously she can only do what she can do because, like, you know, there's the whole thing with Sid. And Sid is actually genuinely cheating on his partner.
Yeah, so she's a like, piece of shit. And also one of my favorite lines is just, ew, Sid. It was giving Schitt's Creek. It was giving Alexis. I loved it.
But, you know, like, she's only doing what she can, like, based on what she's found out about them.
Yeah.
Which I think is so funny that, like, the thing that she finds out is, yeah, no, the partner is 100% correct. Sid is fully cheating on her. Like, and so she's like, you know what? She deserves to know. And I'm also going to do it in such a way that means that you inadvertently stop a kidnapping. Not that Parker knows it's a kidnapping at the time.
The fucking audacity of that man to be like, just because someone sent you a photo and then she hits him with, you sent me the photo. Oh like, my God.
Buddy boy, it came from your phone.
The thing that does confuse me about that particular scenario, though, is I don't know why this feuding couple keeps returning to the same fucking pub to have these circular arguments, like, every day. Like, I understand if you have, like, a regular spot that you go for a date night or whatever. Like, that makes sense. But every single day, while you're on the rocks and livid at each other, babe, keep it at home.
Like... But here's the thing, I am fully convinced that the staff is fully invested at this point.
Oh, there is, like, without a doubt, like a betting pool going.
Yeah, like, the staff would be sad if they did keep it at home. So really, they're doing a public service.
Airing their dirty laundry.
Airing their dirty laundry in public. Mm. They're doing a public service. They keep all of the wait staff entertained. What I do love about this episode, though, is the way that it's kind of like, oh, well, yeah, no, Hardison's our boss. And Parker's like, the fuck do you mean he's your boss? Like, it's just never occurred to her that, like, you know,
he's
like
a business owner.
Like, because the whole idea is they actually do genuinely run the business so they can sort of basically money launder money through it.
Yeah, like, it's so funny. I'm like, I love that it's like a legit business, but it is also a front. But it's also like literally a bit like Elliot is designing the menu. Like, it's not like they're not involved in running an actual business.
It is, for all intents and purposes, an actual business. It just also happens to be the home of a den of thieves. Like, it can do both.
Mm-hmm.
It's serving, you know what I mean? Like, it's
literally and figuratively serving.
It's serving both. And I think it's so funny to be reminded of that because I think in a lot of TV shows like this, and even Leverage to an extent, really does just like forget that, like, you know, oh, okay, well, they're in charge of this restaurant. They are in charge of this restaurant. So I think it's really funny anytime that we get reminded of like, oh no, like they are genuinely like in charge. Like Hardison has staff.
Mm-hmm.
Hardison presumably pays his staff. Like,
Hardison is like approving leave and like organizing interviews and doing like, rosters.
In amongst everything else, you know, he's doing that. And so like, it makes it really funny when you have the moments where it's like this, like Amy's like, you know, when we just don't feel like it, we just say that we're short on staff and don't do it. And then she's like, fuck, I just told my boss's girlfriend that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is so funny because like Parker's like, what the fuck do you mean boss's girlfriend? Like, he's not the boss. Like,
yeah.
Like the fuck, that's not how that works. And it's like, but no, it 100% is. And the sort of prevailing theory that I see a lot in the fandom is like, everyone is just low-key convinced that this business is fully, like, a front for the mob or something. Because, like, how the fuck else do you explain...
The shit.
The shit that goes on in the bar. Like, how else do you explain the fact that, you know, yeah, there's... It's, like, a gajillionaire owns this restaurant. Because, like, Hardison is loaded.
Yeah.
A gajillionaire owns the restaurant. And also is just away on business constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Yeah, it's sus.
And, like, the restaurant is, you know, obviously it's doing well, but, like, there's also a difference between doing well and, like, doing well, well. But it's also, like, you know that Hardison pays these people a living wage. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I have to assume they're making, like, above award rates.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't imagine he's paying them the bare minimum he's required to by law. I assume he's paying them better than that.
Like, the whole
point... I would fucking like to think
that he's paying them. The whole point of this show is they understand that, you know, billionaires doing the bare minimum isn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you're assuming that, like, they're doing more than the bare minimum. The other thing that gets me, though, is they originally establish when they first moved to Portland and... it's revealed that he's bought the restaurant because Elliot says, like, you can't just, you know, move your watch up into the back of somebody's restaurant. He's like, well, that's because I bought the restaurant. Mm. It's fine. One of the key things that Nate points out is, oh, there's really high staff turnover in restaurants. What's the bet this man has no turnover?
Yeah.
Like, what's the bet? This is, like, the best fucking food and hospitality job. So one of the things they were kind of banking on to, like, hide the weird comings and goings was the fact that there is especially high staff turnover.
Yeah.
And then there's just not none. Especially high turnover. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, no, I do love that as a concept. I also, I really, really love that, okay, this is something I was kind of confused by.
Okay.
Is trying to figure out how much Amy knew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because when she was first kind of introduced, I was like, oh, was she, like, a hired, like, community nurse kind of thing that's, like, keeping an eye on Parker? It took me a minute to figure out that she worked for the restaurant. Like,
yeah.
It becomes abundantly clear after the first couple of scenes. But initially, I was like, who the fuck is this woman?
Yeah.
Like, we are getting no information about who she mm-hmm. actually is, what her role is. And then, you know, you sort of figure out, like, oh, okay, she's bringing Parker lunch and stuff up from the kitchens, which makes total sense. And actually, I do think it's really funny that... we keep seeing Amy bring food up and down, and theoretically it's like food the chefs have prepared, but every time we see Parker eat, she's exclusively eating cereal. But like, which is totally on brand and stuff, it makes total sense, except that you see Amy take away empty plates and things, and I'm like, from what? From what? Is Parker just scraping the food into the bin and just eating cereal that she's prepped herself? Because...
I don't know. The best meal she ever had was in French prison.
I fucking love that. And I also love that her, like, response, like, in French being, I wasn't there as long as they thought I would be. So good. That was one of the quotes I recognized from you talking about this episode before.
She's just so iconic. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing I can do about that. I'm really sorry. If you don't want me to quote this episode, then you should have acknowledged that before she becomes so iconic.
Do you want to know what my absolute fucking favorite line without question was in this episode?
Absolutely.
Do you want to have a guess?
I am suddenly blanking on every single line in this episode, but there are just so many good lines that I'm like,
could be anything.
It could be anything. Like this episode is just one that's like absolutely chock-a-block full of killer
iconic
lines.
Iconic moments. Yeah. Yeah. My absolute favorite line is, I read blogs, Amy. Yeah, Parker's just on Tumblr, just fucking scrolling through, like, some master post full of, like, wrecks, links for, like, good harnesses and shit. Like, it's so funny.
What?
Like, the way that I read a Destiel, like, fic wreck master post is the way that Parker is on Tumblr reading, like, wrecks about, you know, how to crack this safe and, you know... good harnesses.
But also the implications that she's just on, like, she just reads the blog post because she's curious. You know what I mean? Like, of the quotes that you could have listed there, that was not the one I was expecting.
Really? Oh, that one just hit. That one was so fucking funny. The delivery.
And the implications phenomenal. That, like, she thinks that saying I read blog posts somehow makes her look less guilty of being a straight up thief.
I just think it's so funny because, like, she's clearly trying to think of a lie. And, like, she's not actually reading blogs about crime. That would be, like, that's not what you're supposed to take away from this scene. It's just the funniest fucking possible delivery. It's so good.
This week, Beth Reisgraf really does just deliver.
Yeah.
On every single line. I was thinking maybe it would be the scene where she's talking about, and she's like, my pain pills just make everything go wibbly wobbly. Because something about the delivery of that one, something about the, we can, fine, you get to choose. And she's talking to the inanimate bear that cannot answer back. And she's like, fine, you get to choose, but just no reality TV, except for Beauty and the Geek. I like that one.
Mm.
Iconic. Something about the way she delivers that, you know, I've got to be quick. I've got to be fast. You know, I've got to be able to leave in 30 seconds if I feel the heat coming around the corner. And he's like, are you quoting the heat? And she's like, yeah, I watched your entire Netflix queue.
So fucking cute, by the way. So fucking cute. Also, what's that fucking thing where it's just like, gotta have drive, gotta have power, gotta stay hungry, we devour. Like, it was like, it's like a very similar...
The vibes are there.
Yeah, and I thought that was funny. I did think it was actually particularly interesting, though, for her to specify, like, she needs to be sharp and stuff. Because I was like, oh, this is actually Parker at literally, like, the most physically vulnerable we've ever seen her. We've seen her more emotionally vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But this, the way that she is physically vulnerable here makes her emotionally vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I felt like they actually strayed further away from that emotional vulnerability than I would have expected them to. Like, mm-hmm. I fully expected us to have a scene where Parker was, like, genuinely quite upset about her situation because of those things, because she needs to be able to make a quick escape, because she needs to be quick on her feet. She needs to be able to have the confidence in her own ability. Mm-hmm. Like, when we had that job where she was weighed down by the weights, mm-hmm. and she had that whole conversation with Hardison about how, you know, she can't be weighed down. If she's slowed down, she dies, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought it was really interesting. I was fully expecting them, because Leverage has a tendency, and to be fair, a lot of shows do, Supernatural is not exempt from this, where they, like, really harp on a point, kind of like the way they did with Nate's drinking, yeah. you know? And so I was fully expecting this to be, like, a sort of a rehash of that conversation and have, like, a quite an emotional point in the episode. But the fact that they didn't, I was surprised by, but in a good way. I was like, oh, okay, so what we're seeing here is growth. So she had that conversation. She had that whole sort of, like, breakdown moment of vulnerability, and this is her beyond that. This is her, like, okay, am I currently incapacitated? Yes. Is it great? No. Am I going to be okay because I can rely on everyone around me? Yes. Can I adapt to the situation? Yes.
Does she feel safe for the first time in her entire life?
Yes.
Which is just so, like, monumental. Like, mm-hmm. we reflect a lot in this show. Like, and the show really likes to harp on sort of the ways in which the team has helped Nate. Yeah. But I think it sometimes just lets the way the team has helped the rest of them kind of go a little bit unsaid, a little bit invisible.
Yeah.
So I really love episodes like this where it's like you can see how much the team has helped. If the team wasn't there, like, Parker would not be like she is.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, she has that experience now to realize that she can rely on the rest of the team. She no longer has to be constantly aware of every single little thing going down at any possible given time to be able to make her escape.
She doesn't have to be entirely self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that she doesn't like to be independent and do her own thing. It's the difference between choosing to enjoy your independence and having to be independent.
Yeah.
And those are two very different things. And so it's nice to see that she, like, obviously she doesn't want to be sitting around not doing much. She wants to be helping. She wants to be part of the job that they're running. Also, I didn't mention it before, but, like, the little cuts that we get into the job, which are just, like, completely out of context and stuff, I did think was, like, kind of fun. I liked that every time we saw Hardison, he was in a new outfit, you know, and doing a different thing. But
I love the fact that he's trying to make friends with the monkey.
Oh my God, he's so desperate to be friends with this monkey. One of my first notes for this episode was, oh, poor monkeys. You know, Ashley, when he hands Nate the box and Nate's just holding this box, it's kind of vibrating and screaming. I was like,
oh. He got it.
What an interesting choice. I also, actually, while we're quickly on Hardison, I love that he exclusively calls her babe this episode. Mm-hmm. I don't think he actually uses her, like, legal name at any point or her chosen name at any point. It's just babe, and I think that's very cute and very wholesome. Also, the part where he says love, snuggles, other romantic verbs. Hilarious.
It's just so iconic. Mm-hmm. Like, he really did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't have to do that, but he did.
Yeah.
And we thank him every day for it.
We do.
It just, I love this episode so much. Like,
it's very fun.
It is, in my opinion, one of the best episodes we get of Leverage.
I agree. From what I've seen, this is definitely, like, top five.
It has something interesting to say, and it says it, and it also, it just hits all of the right notes that I'd want it to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you're right. Like, there are a lot of shows that, for an episode of this type, they would have sort of reverted Parker back to who she was, which is somebody who was constantly on edge and someone who would break down about being incapacitated for, I think they say, like, 6 to 8 weeks or something. She's not allowed to be.
And to be fair, quite rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is, like, a very difficult thing to deal with just as any old person, let alone the person who has the kind of trauma that Parker does.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the fact that they let her sort of adapt and, you know, and find ways around it and be confident in her ability despite, you know.
And I think it also does, it like, it just does show who she is as a character so well. Because, like, yes, does she like this? No. It's driving her insane. She hates not being self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
But it also does show how good she is at surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, she didn't have legs. She borrowed somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she didn't have her normal team who would be able to do all of these things that they would normally be able to do for her. She just learned how to do them.
Yeah.
She just gave it a fucking go. Like, she just...
Yeah. And I think the other really important thing is she did not shy away from asking for help. Mm-hmm. And they get it. We get it brought up in this episode specifically that she says to Amy, I'm just not very good at asking for help. But I thought it was really funny that they did that because, like, yes, she struggled to ask Amy for help. She just kind of either tricked her or kind of bossed her around.
Mm-hmm.
But she asked for help very explicitly from Hardison, from Elliot, you know, Sophie and Nate. Like, it's who she's talking to that defines how hard it is for her to ask for help. And so, like, having her learn to be able to ask Amy, someone she doesn't know very well, but who clearly is, like, trying to help her, letting her in and accepting her help or asking her for help point blank, that is really, really, I think, where the growth happens for Parker this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because she clearly can ask people for help and she has gotten a lot better at expecting help from her teammates. But someone outside of that is a new territory for her to become comfortable with. And so I think that it was really, really important this episode that we get to see her do that with Amy. And the fact that they kind of become buds by the end and they're like watching the movie together and eating the popcorn. I was like, it was giving Peggy, do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, okay, Parker's made a new friend. Mm-hmm. I kind of love this for her.
I also love the moment at the end where they're like, Hardison walks in. He's like, oh, so how was your weekend? They're like, oh, we didn't really do anything. It was kind of boring. And he's like, boring? What do you mean boring? You're watching the remastered version. This is not boring.
He's such a nerd and I love him.
And he's so iconic for that.
And the way that Nate immediately clocked the bullet marks. It was like,
Yeah, because, like, also, he fully knew what Parker was saying on the phone. Like, he understood what she was saying, but he also knew that she was fully capable of doing it by herself.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm not going to say anything about that because... But I do think it's very important that it was an intentional choice for Nate to allow her to get that experience and to trust her own instincts when it come to sort of making those sort of decisions. Yeah.
Not to bring it back to my long-standing point on I think Nate and Sophie at this rate will retire together thing, but I was actually thinking about the scene where we have that, like, we see Nate and Sophie's side of that conversation. They're, like, lying in the bed and there's candles everywhere. And my first thought was, wow, what a fire hazard. But I was interested by the way they ended that scene, which is, like, Sophie's like, oh, like, light it. And he's like, are you sure? And she says, yeah. And then he tosses the match and there's, like, a whole other thing that goes up.
So supernatural coded of them.
A little. I thought it was really interesting because I was like, what is the point of this scene? Like, I understand cutting to Nate and Sophie because we've been cutting to Elliot and Hardison throughout the episode. Like, she's talking to Nate. It makes sense to cut to these guys. It makes sense to cut to them in, like, a little romantic setting, like, you know, on their night off kind of thing. I get that. The fire, however, I was like, seems so deliberate. Like, and so to me, I was like, I feel like this is them literally, like, setting it alight. You know, like, literally in the sense that, like, they're starting a fire, but figuratively in the sense of, like, they're going to burn it all down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, like, kind of like a phoenix from the ashes, like a rebirth kind of moment. Like, okay, we have this thing. It's time to let it go. We are going to burn it to the ground and we're going to start fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's kind of the only way that I felt like I could interpret that scene outside of just, like,
being like, let's have some fire.
Yeah. Outside of it just being, like, completely unintentional and just, like, for some reason they decided that they were really going to go ham with the pyrotechnics. Like, you know, outside.
I mean, it is the final season, so.
Yeah. Like, maybe they had some budget to blow. I don't know. But my thought was, like, the only way that I could interpret that in, like, a metatextual analysis sense is, like, oh, Nate is ready to burn it all down but he wants to do it. He doesn't want to do it alone. And he's like, he and Sophie are going to come to this decision together as a unit. It's not like he is going to make a decision for the both of them. And I think that that is backed up by the way that we've had him and Sophie kind of chatting at like the sort of, you know, the final scenes of the last few episodes. Like, it feels, and also I mentioned like when Sophie first took on the theater, which we haven't had mentioned in a hot minute, you know, like I was like, okay, so Sophie's going to have a thing like that she can put her energy into outside of cons. Nate needs something that he can put his energy into, but he kind of needs to let everything go first. Yeah. Like he needs to get used to letting go of that control, and he will have people around him to help him with that. But I thought that that particular scene, I was like, I don't really see another way to interpret it. If someone else has a way to interpret it that is not spoilery or can come and talk to me about it once I've seen the whole show. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about for the episode? We've gotten distracted a few times.
We've gotten very distracted a few times, but that's pretty par for the podcast. Like, I feel like
here's... on brand.
If you've come here expecting us to not get distracted, then...
If you came here expecting us to talk about leverage, then, like, I'm sorry.
But... Welcome to your first episode of the podcast. Like...
We talk about everything but...
I think this episode is so important, and I'm very excited to be able to talk to you about why this episode is important.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point, there's just not much else that I can say without verging on spoiler territory.
Okay, no, I get
and
that.
And I do think that this episode is one that it will be better to wait and then talk to you about retrospectively.
Okay, cool.
Rather than explaining to you how I think this episode is important.
Relevant moving forward.
It is the sort of episode, though, that I feel like I could write, like, a thousand word meta post on like how this is relevant to
like me with 310 or Faith.
Just it is so important to the, you know, to the show and the sort of thesis statement of the show, and also it is so important to the reading of the end of the season. And I just don't want to spoil that for you because I do think it is absolutely incredible the way that it ties in,
yeah,
and in ways that you are probably not even seeing.
I can almost guarantee you I'm not seeing them. I will maybe make the connections right at the end.
Yeah.
When I'm supposed to. I think Leverage is very good at hiding things if they want to hide them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I said this with season 3 or 4, one of the two, where I feel like it would be more interesting retrospectively. I think maybe with Moreau.
So that is season 3.
Yeah, I think... Mm-hmm. You know, wanting to go back and be like, oh, okay, where can I see them hiding this information? And like, where can I look at Elliot's behavior and like draw like, you know, conclusions from that?
And the answer is lots of places with that season.
Yeah.
Because he's acting kind of weird all season and he knows things that he should know all season.
Yeah. So, but my point is like, you know, they're good at hiding bits. And so I think, again, like this whole series, honestly, is probably really, really interesting to do retrospectively. I'm interested to go back and rewatch at least parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
I probably honestly wouldn't go back and rewatch the first season just because I spent a lot of it kind of being like, Nate is so annoying. But I think anything from like sort of season 2 through, I could probably go get behind like going back and like looking for more.
I will say though, personally, I find it really interesting to rewatch season 1 just because
I think
the way they lay the bones of the season as a whole are really interesting. And I do think that when you've watched the rest of the season, watching season 1 Nate is really interesting. Like he is a fascinating sort of character. And I think that you can definitely see a lot more of who he becomes in season 1 than you kind of realize on a first watch through.
Yeah, that's valid. Maybe I will go through and rewatch the whole thing. Who knows,
right? It's now, also about the time and energy and all of that sort of jazz.
Yeah, look, so, right now I'm pretty tied up. I need to catch back up to Doctor Who because I saw all the gift sets of the new special and it really made me want to know what was happening. So I've probably got...
Oh, next thing you'll be fully back into Super Who Lock.
Oh, look... I don't know if I could ever do Sherlock again. Like, not for fun in any case. The only note that I really wanted to finish up with was that I think it's so funny that these, like, people who were, like, plotting this kidnapping, they've gone to the extent of, like, using the burner phones and, like, being there every day, figuring out the exact movements. They had the van, which had, like, the license plate that had the disability parking allowance and, you know, like, all these things and, like, the tires on the van and whatever. They seemingly had thought of pretty much everything. They were running a pretty tight ship, right? But they seemingly only just noticed the fucking security cameras with, like, 2 minutes to go before the end of the episode. Like,
okay.
It is established that they have been there for fucking weeks.
Here's the thing.
Every day.
I think it's less that they realize the security cameras are there, and more that they realize somebody was actually actively watching them through the security cameras. Because that's so always funny. How I've interpreted it. Not as like, oh my God, there are security cameras here, but actually, oh, there are security cameras here, and monitored. Somebody's actually watched them and worked out what we were planning. It's less...
That's so funny. Like, I understand that, but, like, the way that, to me, that it gets, like, framed is that, like, this guy is just, like, looking around and, like, they're zooming in on the different security cameras. He's like, I think I know what happened. It's like, wow, these guys suck at their job. Like, not as if I would be any smoother, but, like, also, I was like, that's so funny. Like, you thought of everything except the CCTV. Which is a pub that you're in every day.
And also, the other thing is, it's not even that uncommon for, like, restaurants and bars to have security cameras. Like,
I think most businesses, regardless of the, like, obviously, you know, not every business, but I feel like most businesses have some kind of CCTV.
I think it is meant to literally just be that he just didn't realize that they had actually been sort of caught on the, like, they knew that they were on the security cameras, but I think it's the difference between knowing that you're on security cameras and knowing that somebody's actively reviewing the security tapes.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know about you, but, like, where I used to work in food and hospitality, we had security cameras, but we only ever watched the security camera footage if something happened. Like, if there was a particularly rude customer or if, like, something happened. We once had to go back and revisit the security cameras because one of the staff members just straight up lit a bag on fire on the Bay Marie light and then ran it through the store and didn't tell the boss. So we went back and revisited the CCTV camera and it's a video. Sorry.
I'll pull myself together.
But no, it is the way that they do shoot it though is a choice and a half.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny.
And I love leverage for that. They always make a silly goofy choice sometimes. You know what I mean? Like let them. Like I enjoy the silly goofy choices. That's why I like leverage. I like a good dosage of silly goofy. Silly goofy is fun.
It has its moments.
Has its moments.
Anyway, I don't think I have any other real notes as such.
Look, I am gonna call it a day too. Because I feel like the more I say about this episode, the more I'm going to, like, verge on, like, maybe accidentally spoiling some stuff for you. And I don't want that. That just sounds like, you know, not the point of this podcast. The point of the podcast is I don't spoilery stuff for you.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it there for the day. And so that means that I do have to ask you, Beth, how would you rate The Broken Wing Job out of 5?
I gave it a 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked this episode. Like I said before, like, I think it easily falls in top 5.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a fun premise and it's executed so well. And the characterization for everyone is really fun and really like, there's no downtime, but in like a way that I think is enjoyable. Sometimes I find leverage, like there's no downtime in a way that is kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
This is like, there's no downtime, but in a way that like is kind of relaxed.
Yeah.
And like everything that happens on screen is important, but it doesn't feel like it's super, super intense all the time, always. Like it's very laid back. And I think that what they say about the characters is interesting. I think the plot itself is fun. Like I didn't get the twist coming. And then as soon as I understood the twist, I was like, oh, that's so clever. I really like it. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really solid ep.
Okie dokies. Well, the next episode is called The Rundown Job. Beth, what do you think that's about?
Okay, two things popped to mind immediately, which is always how I make my guesses on these things.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, hit and run.
Okay.
Like if you were like to mow someone down kind of thing, like a rundown. Or number two, rundown meaning to be like unwell.
Okay.
You're like burnt out, a bit under the weather. Mm-hmm. Like that's just like sort of like a colloquial term, I guess, for a sick. And so I they're very different directions. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've ever had any kind of like hit and run type plot on Leverage before. So like that could be something.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, we've had fake hit and runs before.
Yeah, they've had constructed ones, but like,
not it's so a bit much. Like the no actual murder, only attempted murder thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No actual hit and runs, just fake hit and runs.
Yeah. Oh, actually, that reminds me something in this episode that I was surprised by. I was surprised that, like, he shot that lady.
Yeah, when the cop.
Yeah, I was surprised. I for some reason was just like, we don't usually have that much, like,
actual violence?
And if we do, it's not usually between, like, Like, normally it would be between the main cast and a sort of, like, cast member of the week. This was, like, two separate cast members of the week and two cast members we didn't really know that well. So I thought it was really interesting, especially because, like, normally if we did have that kind of thing, it'd be in, like, a cold open. So it just kind of caught me off guard. Not in a bad way, just in a, like, oh, that's different. But, yeah, no. So I feel like I'm probably entirely wrong about my guess. I think that... Oh, thank you for confirming that.
I'm just saying, okay, you can think what you think. I'm not giving you any indications. I don't know, man. Purposefully bland and meaningless.
I don't know. Like, it could also be like a rundown business, you know, or a rundown estate, or like it's really hard because Leverage deliberately makes their titles really fucking vague, and like I get why, but it does make it difficult for me to play the guessing game.
No, that's absolutely okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. If you want to see us again next week for the rundown job, we would be honoured to have you. Please have a lovely evening, morning, afternoon, night, lunch, brunch, etc. If you want to talk to us, but you can talk to us about literally anything, but suggested conversation topics do include...
I want to know...
Yep.
In terms of, like, Parker's friends outside of the, like, crew... Do we think, like, Amy and Peggy, like, do you think Amy's coming to brunch now?
I 100% think Amy's coming to brunch now.
Okay.
Like, I didn't think that before, but now it's in my head. Like, you have solidified that for me.
Because now...
I've never thought about it, but it's there now.
For me, when Peggy and Hurley get married, Amy and Parker are bridesmaids.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they are involved in the wedding.
Yeah.
You know?
They're going to be besties.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I just kind of see that. Now.
No, I think you're so valid for that.
Thank you.
I think you're so valid. I want to know, was your pandemic panini experience like mine and Beth's? Were you essential workers or were you like Parker? Were you stuck on the couch?
Stuck at home.
Stuck at home.
Yeah. Or were you like the unknown middle ground?
Was there a middle ground?
I don't know anyone who was middle ground. Literally one or the other.
Yeah.
You either were working the least you've ever worked and it was driving you insane, or you're working the most you'd ever worked and it was driving you insane. Like,
either way, it fucking sucked.
Wow, the pandemic was annoying. Hot takes.
Hot takes from Jamie. We should just rename the podcast at this point.
The pandemic was inconvenient. We'll submit that for understatement of the century alongside I saw someone get hurt once.
And you know what? He did see someone get hurt once.
Yeah.
Bye!
Bye! What a weird fucking outro. We really need to be better with those.